Welcome to the Concierge CPA. I'm Jackie Meyer, founder of the Concierge Accountant Program and TaxPlan IQ software. This is a podcast for accounting firm owners and influencers who are pursuing world-class service. We discuss their path to excellence, their daily habits, and what influences them and their work. We believe that every person has a unique message that can positively impact the world. Stick around till the end of the show. We'll reveal how you can be our next guest in 15 to 20 minutes. Let's go, y'all. Welcome, welcome to the Concierge CPA podcast. I'm your host, Jackie Meyer. And today I have a very unique guest that has a very unique story coming from faith and integrating financial advisory services, Keith Conley. And so I'm really excited to introduce you to him in just a moment. I do want to mention that this episode is brought to you by TaxPlan IQ, which, full disclosure, is my own tax advisory software. You can create tax plans in minutes with TaxPlan IQ and save thousands for your clients, earn thousands. And we have a brand new feature coming that I'm so excited about. Her name is Jane, J-A-I-N-E, and she is a GPT-4-based chatbot that is going to be the smartest tax manager you've ever heard of and make our users about 70% more efficient. So that is coming any day now. Let's dive into our fascinating conversation with Keith. So Keith, welcome so much to the show. I appreciate you being here.
Thanks for having me. This is going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah. Now, your journey from pastoral ministry to becoming a financial advisor is really intriguing. So can you share a little bit more about your background and where you're at now? And then we'll kind of go from there to see how you found this passion in finance.
Yeah, thank you. I began pastoral ministry in my early 20s. I went through Bible college and seminary. I served in churches in Chicago, Pennsylvania, California, and Portland, Oregon. And at the end of the day, I just realized that pastoral ministry wasn't really my full-time calling. Still very active in our church. There was nothing that really happened from the perspective that I'm not qualified for pastoral ministry. I just realized it wasn't exactly what I was called to do. At my last church where I was serving, I had a number of pastoral counseling cases where there were folks who were struggling financially. They had budgeting issues. They didn't really know where their money was going. And I felt very confident that I could encourage them from the word of God, but I just had this nagging feeling like, gosh, like I wish I could help these people with their finances, but I was just as much in the dark as they were about anything related to money. After I left pastoral ministry, my wife and I moved back to my hometown in central Pennsylvania, and I began working for the state of Pennsylvania in what was at one time the nation's largest federal student loan servicer in their state grant department. So I was talking to folks about receiving free money for college. And then I was working with student loan borrowers. I was very interested in, surprised to see how interested I was in reading people's tax documents and the free application for federal student aid. And I got this big passion for talking to people about money for college. And then I became a supervisor in default collection. So as I like to tease people, I went from giving away free grant money to college students to taking people's money. And at that same time, I was starting to get really interested in finances. I had never heard of an S-corp, let alone could tell you a whole lot about what a stock was. And so I started reading about personal finance. I started watching a lot of YouTube videos and reading books and magazines, and I just knew that I didn't know what I didn't know. And I just kept reading, and I was looking for the next thing that the Lord was really going to have me do. I had a really good job with the state of Pennsylvania, but I still had this desire to serve the Lord. And as I was getting interested in finance, I didn't understand how I could be interested in finance and serving the Lord. But then I became aware of an organization called Certified Kingdom Advisors, which is an association of faith-based advisors of financial advisors, accountants, and attorneys who are trained to bring biblical wisdom with the advice they provide. And I also became aware of the Certified Financial Planner designation. And I was very interested in financial planning, but again, I knew I didn't know enough to go into the field. And I was very hesitant to go and work for a big box firm, have them provide me with their training, and then be pressured to bring them all my friends and family and neighbors and anyone in my network when I didn't have a background.
Sure.
So my wife and I decided that I should buy the education requirement for both the Certified Financial Planner designation and Certified Kingdom Advisor designation. I went through the material, and by the time I was done, I got an A on my final project for the CFP education requirement. I took the exam and passed, and I was hooked.
But you fell in love with it, huh?
I did. And in the meantime, my wife and I were fostering and then adopted our children out of the foster care system. And we had to move back for different reasons to Southern California, where my wife is from. And I took the exam, I passed, and I was connected with my mentor, who's been in the financial planning world for 40 plus years. And so since that time, I've started my business, and he's been encouraging me and mentoring me to build this business.
Very cool. Do you want to give him a shout out, or?
Bob is a Kingdom Advisor here in Southern California. He's 70 years old, and Bob Mitchell is, or RC as he goes, has been just a blessing. He is still in the business, but he's not really picking up any new clients. He's just having fun doing what he wants, when he wants, where he wants. And someday I'll be there too.
Okay, very cool. Yeah, I think that the Kingdom Advisors do workshops for CPAs here in Dallas at Gateway. Does that sound right?
They do all kinds of things. They have monthly study groups. They have an annual conference. There's Kingdom Advisors who are attorneys and advisors and accountants all over the country. So it wouldn't surprise me that they're doing something in Dallas. I know they're doing things all around the country.
Okay. Yeah. I think I've attended a couple of workshops at Gateway with them. I need to check back into that. I went almost every year to one, and then I forgot all about it, but it was always a great org. And then it was free CPE, which is always nice. Tell me, like, where are you at now from after all of this history?
After I passed the CFP exam, which is like passing the hardest exam first, most people get into the business, they get their insurance license, or they get their Series 6 and start selling mutual funds and annuities. And then maybe they become a Series 7, which is the full service advisor. And then maybe after 3 to 5 years in their early 30s, or even younger than that, they'll decide, hey, I'm going to go for the CFP because I want to be in the business long term. And the CFP is the standard of excellence in our industry. I passed that exam first.
Yeah, that's great.
And I like to joke that a couple weeks later, I strutted into the insurance exam and did it with both of my arms tied behind my back and my eyes closed, because it was just such a complete different mindset from taking the CFP exam, which was very high pressure. Mm-hmm. So after I did the CFP exam, I got my insurance license. I got my Series 7 and 65. And I've been building this financial advisory firm specializing in high net worth business owners who care about generational wealth transfer planning. And what I mean by that is the stats are very clear that when wealth goes from the first generation to the second generation, it's almost all the time lost. In other words, the third generation very often will not see a penny of it.
Yeah.
And that's really a shame. There's all these different mindsets within the Christian world about the importance of wealth. We have the prosperity gospel. We have the people who think that poverty is next to godliness. And neither of them are true. Neither of them are consistent with the word of God. But what we have done here at True Legacy Financial Planning is working with these high net worth business owners to prioritize how to plan their wealth to honor the Lord, express a generous form of charitable giving, and to prepare what we call the next steward, to equip the next generation to receive that wealth in a way that would continue to honor the Lord and manage those investments to free up money for the kingdom of God.
Okay, so let's get practical and technical with that. As an accountant, I like to know details. How are you doing that? How are you accomplishing that?
There's everything that the financial planner is always doing, working, or at least the good ones. They're always working with the accountants, the attorneys, and the other insurance and the other advisors and helping them with those holistic financial plans. That's something we do. But if that's where we stop, we're really dropping the ball. And this is what I consider to be the sin of the financial services industry. We're very good as an industry at helping people accumulate and leave wealth, and then we're done. What I am doing here at True Legacy is working with multiple generations of the family to help them be united over the wealth rather than divided. Because what happens when wealth goes from one generation to the next? Johnny wants to put his hands in the pot and take what belongs to Sally, for example, or there's all these resentments, there's bickering, there's fighting, and people understandably but wrongly think that, hey, if it's in the estate plan, it's going to go flawlessly and everything's going to work well. But what we believe is that if we want wealth to go from one generation to the next, we have to equip the next generation to receive that wealth and to disciple them and prepare them to manage that wealth in the same way that the first generation did. And we do that by a couple things. I think the first thing is the most important. We have to unite the family. And how do you unite the family? By storytelling. The older generation tell their story. How did they accumulate this? What were the big failures they experienced and the challenges and the stresses that were involved in that story? Talk about the failures. Talk about the things that didn't work along with all the successes. And from there, you're going to create this common bond among the family members as that story is repeatedly told to multiple generations. This is not a one-time event.
Mm-hmm. So are you facilitating those discussions?
Yes.
Wow, that's so cool.
And then from there, we are setting apart principles and values which will guide the family to make future financial decisions. We will have an explanation of what is expected with the family to do with those assets rather than spending it on frivolous spending. There are processes to spend that money, to use it for certain things or not to use it for certain things, and to replenish the wealth as that wealth passes down over future generations. It really comes down to the story of contrasting the Rockefellers versus the Vanderbilts. 48 years after Cornelius Vanderbilt died, the Vanderbilt dynasty was gone. It was depleted. But today, the John D. Rockefeller Foundation supports over 150 family members and gives away $50 million a year in charitable giving.
Wow.
Why is that?
Yeah.
It's because John D. Rockefeller knew that he couldn't just hand over the assets through the trust when he passed away. He had to have a common culture generated in his family of generosity and decision-making and processes to replenish that wealth.
Very cool.
If your listeners are readers, I would suggest they pick up the book, What Would the Rockefellers Do?
Okay. Yeah, I was going to say, it sounds like a great case study.
It's a very good book. It's not the whole story. The writer is definitely promoting life insurance, and we love life insurance here at True Legacy. It's part of the plan, but it's not the whole thing. And so if the clients of your families want to preserve that wealth and not have it wasted, you have to create that culture to unite the family rather than just let them all sort it out when grandma and grandpa are dead.
Yeah. That's great. Yeah, that kind of reminds me. I have a friend and colleague, Rory Henry, who's a financial planner, and he was just telling me the other day about a book that he's writing about life planning instead of just financial planning. And so I don't think it gets into this level of the faith aspect, but who knows? Maybe it will. So shout out to Rory whenever his book comes out. But yeah, that sounds really cool. So it sounds like you have a lot going on. Do you have certain initiatives that you're working on right now that you're excited about?
Yeah, I am really working to build awareness of what I do. I think what I bring to the table is quite unique. I'm not the only one who's doing it, that's for sure. There are people who are much further along and bigger than I am and more experienced than I am, but I would like to become that next generation of advisors who are doing this wealth transfer planning. I'm doing a lot of work to just let people know who I am and what I do and how I can be of value to families. So earlier this year, I built a website. We started a podcast a year ago, and you were on that earlier this year. So that was a really fun episode. And I'm learning social media and building team members to help me with these sorts of things.
Yeah. So social media is a beast. I know we'll talk about that a little bit later in regards to your coaching topic. But yeah, so your podcast, Faith and Money, is with Crystal Wampler, right? I always mess up her last name. Yes. And she is the sweetest person I've ever met in my life. I love her to death. And that's how we got connected originally.
Yes.
How did you two meet?
I think we met at a networking event here in Orange County, California. And Crystal is just a very great networker. She's very good at business development. And she just has a good mind for building relationships with people. And she's interested in some of the same things that I'm interested in, faith, business. And so we've connected over that. And she's been a great asset to the Faith and Money podcast. I really enjoy her and her fiance, Clayton.
Awesome. All right. Now, you mentioned a book recommendation, but I know there was another one that I always love to ask about book recommendations. I'm such a bookworm and I love learning. And so you mentioned another one to me prior to the podcast, Family Wealth by James E. Hughes Jr. Why is that a must read?
He is helping me formulate my thoughts on the things we're talking about today. He is an attorney who understands processes to help high net worth families preserve their wealth. At the beginning of this book, he sets up this saying that's very common among his readers, shirt sleeves to shirt sleeves in three generations. And what that means is that typically what happens is the wealth is built, it's left, and then by the third generation, the family are back to poverty. Mm-hmm. And so his whole point is to help these high net worth families preserve their wealth and to help the future family members use the wealth to preserve their three types of capital. There's the human capital, the intellectual capital, and the financial capital. And his point is correct, that the financial capital is actually the very least important. Financial advisors focus on that, and that's the wrong place to focus. The best place to focus is on helping the family members, the human capital, to have the best life possible, is the way he puts it. And so when you focus on that, that is really informing the family on intellectual capital. You might have family members, and this happened in the John D. Rockefeller family, where the son was not interested in the business. And John D. Rockefeller said, okay. And rather than forcing them to continue in the business, he set up the wealth to be preserved through different methods rather than continuing in the business. But you will also recognize that different people in your family are going to have different gifts, different abilities, different experiences that they will bring to the table. And the family should use that, those experiences, those abilities in the financial plan to preserve the human element of the capital. And the financial capital really serves the human and the intellectual capital. So it's not the human's capital serving the financial capital. It's the other way around.
Yeah.
So it's just a fantastic read. It does get very in-depth about family governance structures, which to me is not the most exciting topic because I'm not an attorney and I don't set up those processes. But okay. I believe very much so that the value of financial planning isn't me just being this holistic advisor that's bringing together the tax and the estate and investment and the insurance. Sure, that's all important. But for me, holistic financial planning means that I am bringing in other advisors that don't do what I do and working together collaboratively for the client. And James Hughes' books really brings that into focus.
Awesome. Yeah. Okay. So this gets me thinking about tax strategies and what Rockefeller did for his estate planning. You said that he decided to pull the money out of the business. Did the trusts or nonprofits or whatever direction he went with, are those all still like good, useful tactics today?
Yeah, I'm not going to tell you that I'm an expert on the Rockefeller Trust. Yes. There are dynasty trusts out there that can stay in place for, you know, quite a long time. And there's strategies out there to avoid things like estate taxes and also keeping the money in the family rather than going to the IRS or local governments. What I always really emphasize is that if families want to be united, they have to be united over a common bond, but also a common cause. And all high net worth families, in my opinion, need to be expressively pro-charitable giving. And there are just enormous tax benefits to charitable trusts, and no one situation is going to be the same, but there are just phenomenal tax benefits found in charitable trusts where you can give a gift, get a tax deduction, and then have income coming from them that can be used to fund financial strategies that will actually replenish that money in a tax efficient way. Why not get a tax deduction for wealth to be of value to some cause that the family believes in, and then get a tax-free death benefit through a life insurance policy? There's the question of what do you put in the charitable trust? What kind of charitable trust? Is it a charitable annuity trust, a charitable leads trust? I can't make those decisions. I'm not an attorney. But what I am doing is I'm working with the family as like the Patrick Mahomes or Tom Brady of that family, helping them bring together all of those advisors.
Yeah, I love that. I always say, like, at my concierge CPA firm, I was always the quarterback, right? The quarterback managing those relationships. So very similar to what you're describing. Yeah, that's great. So there's a lot of different levels of charitable giving, right? Let's say that a listener wants to know more about that or charitable strategies. You've got anything from basic cash, non-cash donations on your Schedule A. You've got donor advised funds, which I can't believe a lot of people still don't even know about, which are pretty cool, easy solutions.
Yes.
It's like a savings account, but you get the deduction when you put the money in, right? So
right.
Fidelity hosted or any brokerage firm tends to have those. And you can get that immediate deduction on like 1231 of whatever tax year you want it for. And then maybe say, I don't want to give this all to my church at once. So you're going to piecemeal it out over the remaining years, right?
Yeah, donor advised funds are just phenomenal tools. There's different ways to charitable give. But the question is always, if I'm not going to give cash, which that's usually not the most efficient way to give, but that's the way the majority of people in our churches give, which is fine. But if you have assets, giving something other than cash might be better. And so the question it will be sorting through those assets to work together with those clients to figure out what it is, what should I give?
Uh-huh.
And usually a lot of those gifts are, hey, I've had this position in this stock for 40 years. I don't need this cash, but it has, you know, 10,000% capital gains. And that's going to be a big tax bill. Let's give that to the donor advised fund or to the church or to the annuity or the charitable remainder annuity or whatever it might be for that family strategy. So you have to be strategic in understanding which assets to gift and how and when.
And when, yes, that's a big key because you do have to pre-plan a lot of charitable gifting strategies. With the charitable trust, if you're going to move a business into it before selling it, you can't have a letter of intent done. You can't be too far in the process of a business sale before you do that move. And a lot of people miss out on that. But yeah, stock donations are wonderful. It's great when you can potentially exclude the cap gains and also get the tax deduction, which is awesome.
Right.
And then we go from donor advised fund up another level is really getting more into the CRTs and charitable remainder trusts and different cruts right. and all that stuff, strategies. And I had a particular vendor that we work with at Taxman IQ that does all of the setup of that for free. And then they'll wow. do the trust accounting just to be managing some of the assets. And I've really gotten into that over the last year or so as a really cool strategy. But yeah, let's see. What else is there? I think we touched on a lot of the good ones.
There are other things that people need to know. Your listeners are our tax professionals, and they're aware, like, hey, there's a sunset on these estate tax laws coming in 2026, which really isn't that far away. These right. strategies do not get set up overnight. They take time. If you wait until September of 2025, you might be quite too late. Mm-hmm. So I have a 70-year-old business owner that I've been talking to who's probably worth $15 million. Is he over the estate tax limit today? No. Will he be in 2026? Most likely, yes.
Sure.
So the day, I'll say this sarcastically, the day of salvation is today. Set right. this up now.
Yeah. And word on the street through the AICPA and legislation folks that I know is we're not going to see any legislative changes until the 2025 sunsets happen. That's what they're focusing on now. And so
right.
everyone was hoping for these R&D credit changes and stuff like that this year, and it's not happening. But they are focusing a lot on those sunset provisions and how that's going to change things. So it'll be really interesting how it all comes out in the next couple of years.
Yeah. Another thing that I've been working on, and this is a minor thing, or a minor tax benefit for most high net worth people. But right now I'm working with a 64-year-old attorney, and he itemizes his taxes. And so what we're doing is we're getting him a long-term care policy, and he's going to be able to write off about $4,700 of that premium on his as a medical expense deduction. And if you are a owner of an S corporation and you don't meet that criteria for a medical expense, you don't itemize, for example, or you don't meet the criteria for medical expense, you can actually write it off as a business expense for the premium of a long-term care policy. So his policy and everyone's cost is different. If you're a listener, don't take this as how much your policy is going to cost, but his policy this year will cost him about $5,700. So basically $1,000 for his life insurance or his long-term care policy. That's a pretty good great. Deal. And that's something that's becoming increasingly important for people who are 55 and older.
Yeah. So long-term care costs, I remember a statistic I heard a few years ago. I'm curious if it's still true, but you're easily looking at over $100,000 in costs there.
And they inflate every year astronomically. If it costs $100,000 today and you're 55 in good health, you might not need it until you're 85, 90. People are living longer, and that's a great thing. We love to see people living longer, but what it also means is that their end of life expenses are going to be greater.
Yeah. I hate to see accountants and clients shying away from insurance strategies because they remember whatever. I'm too young for whatever happened in the 80s, 90s when like all these sham insurance things happened. But so it doesn't really clout my judgment. I'm just like, this is another strategy to use. Yeah. And there are some really beneficial insurance strategies. And then, oh my goodness, I had one of my coaching students, an accounting firm owner, that passed away with no life insurance. And the only asset they had was their business. And it was a small business. So just trying to remind everybody, make sure that you're covered with those kind of things. It's so important, right?
Yeah. With business succession, people think I'm not selling the business, so I don't need to think about that. And that's the exact wrong approach to take. I get it. There are startups who are starting something from the ground up. They're not thinking about it. As I tell people, there's only two things that I can really promise about businesses. If you're successful, you're going to be taxed. And one day you will no longer be in business. Now, The day you exit the business, I don't know when it is. I don't know what the circumstances are going to be, but I guarantee you one day you're no longer going to be in business. And you can really have a lot of control over what happens over your business interest whenever that you exit the business. And the more planning you do ahead of time, the more successful you will be. Without a proper planning, you might just close shop and sell whatever assets you have, the machines and maybe a building or a vehicle or whatever, and just get the liquidity value, which is always the lowest amount of value. But if you set up proper strategies while the business is going good and you're in your prime, so to speak, and you set up those processes, you might be able to guarantee a buyer for a certain price whenever that event happens.
Yeah.
And so when I talk to these business owners, the first thing I usually offer them is a complimentary business valuation.
Nice. That's awesome.
And so I say, hey, let me pay for the valuation for you so that we can review where your business is at and get an idea of what some of your risks are and set up strategies in place for you to make sure that your family or you will be compensated for your interest in the business whenever that time comes. And it becomes even more important when there's more than one business owner. Maybe there's two friends or two partners or multiple partners in a business. It's very important to have those things set up ahead of time because it can just get really messy. And then all of a sudden you're in business litigation.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, so you reminded me of one other cool thing that we did with a client a couple years ago. They were looking to sell their software company, and it was a partnership structure. And they were able to actually donate a portion of the partnership interest to a donor advised fund before they got a letter of intent or whatnot from the buyer. And if someone's charitably inclined, it saved them hundreds of thousands of dollars in taxes by pre-planning. And I was so excited to show that ROI to that client. That was pretty cool. But yeah, so insurance, definitely, I think people put that as the pinnacle of like complexity. They're already like, I already don't understand CRT or defined benefit plan or whatever. What are you talking about? How are we going to do this insurance component? I like to say, just take it one step at a time. You don't have to roll in the insurance right when you create these kinds of plans and whatnot, but there are additional components that you can do with insurance. And it's definitely something to take a look at.
Yeah, I mean, I've been very insurance heavy in this discussion because I'm such a big believer in it, but I want your listeners to know I do actually manage investments as well.
Okay.
I am that full service financial planner. I do manage portfolios with individual stocks and bonds and mutual funds sometimes, but it's really a matter of just helping families with that holistic financial plan, you know, from top to bottom, working with their other advisors in any of their financial planning needs. So I love insurance strategies, but love the investment side too.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit about your outlook on our economy and what do you think is going to happen?
That's funny you ask, because that's usually the first question I ask my investment clients. How do you feel?
Okay.
Normally, I get a lot of, I think it's really bad. And I think we're in a recession, or we're going to go in a depression. That's what a lot of people tell me. The fact is that people are very surprised to see that the Dow and the S&P 500, they're up this year significantly. But if you really get down in the weeds and look and see what's actually happened, the majority of companies are flat or down. It's only a few that are raising up those indexes.
Probably the AI companies. all the AI stuff, right?
I don't know how your listeners feel about what are the direction of our country, and I don't really want to get into the politics of it.
Sure.
But I am very much of the mind that I'm bullish on this country. And that surprises a lot of people. The fact is, and again, I don't really want to get in a huge political discussion here.
Sure.
But I think China's in trouble. Yes, they're big, but China has a problem. Their one child policy that they had is coming to roost. Mm. They are very dependent on a large labor force? And how can you have a labor force which is really focused on youth, right? How can you have a youthful workforce with one gender of children?
Amen to that.
if you can't have babies because you have all men or all women in your country, there's a problem. And so I'm not going to tell you that everything is wonderful in America. I think there's some real issues in this country, economically speaking, but America is going to continue to surprise the world and continue to be that economic superpower. And so the majority of my investments are still in American companies.
Okay, very cool. Yeah, that's interesting. I like that insight. It's always neat to hear from people that are in it day to day, for sure. By the way, my husband is not a CFP, Mark, but he has all his series licenses. He's worked for Fidelity for 25 years. I get to hear a little bit of insight on things from him. But going back to the CFP exam, I hear it's a lot harder than the CPA exam. I don't know if that's still true or not, but kudos to anyone that has mastered that for sure, because he never wanted to.
The CFP exam is not about getting the right answer. It's very analytical and it's about finding the right solution. It's a multiple choice exam, but there might be four or five different options, and then they have all these different variables. Is it 1, 2, 3, or is it 1, 3, and 5? And you have to find the best solution. It's a very difficult exam. I've never taken a CPA exam. I mean, the CPA exam is broken into several parts, mm-hmm. whereas the CFP exam is just one day.
Right.
But I've heard that it's the same as level of intensity as the bar exam or the CPA exam. I can't tell you because I've never taken those exams. There are CFP who have a JD. There are CFPs or CPAs, and you'll have to ask them. But I don't get a whole lot of anxiety, but I love to tell the story that the day before my exam, my wife asked me to set the table for dinner, and I had a little bit of a conniption fit. And I was like, what do you mean set the table? I have this exam tomorrow. I have to study. And I'm like out of my mind. And I, like, as soon as I started opening my mouth, I couldn't stop myself, but I knew I was screwing up. And my wife, who's just the most amazing person I know, was like, okay. And so I take the exam. I pass the exam. I was a provisional pass. And then I called her after the exam. First words out of my mouth were, I'm sorry. And she's like, did you pass? I was like, yeah. And she says, then I forgive you.
There you go. Very nice. Very nice. Yeah. Okay. So let's switch gears a little bit. I know I'm all about like productivity hacks. And you mentioned one that it's mind-blowing to me that a lot of people still don't use. I believe it was about e-calendar stuff, right? And scheduling.
Yeah, I have the Calendly app. And for a long time, I just used the free version, which would allow people to schedule a 15-minute phone call, which was really great. Someone said, hey, can you help me with this? And we would just set up a 15-minute phone call and we would go forward from there. But as I'm doing a podcast and I'm interviewing people to come onto the podcast, I have people asking about my services. I have people who want to do one-on-one networking. I'm a very small operation. It's me and just maybe a couple part-time team members. So most of the bulk of the administrative and the busy work that I really hate falls on me. And I got tired of emailing people and saying, hey, I'm available these dates and these times. What's work for you? Especially when there's multiple people that we have to coordinate schedules.
Sure.
The Calendly app for the full premium version is $144 a year. And you can create an unlimited number of events. You can link your Zoom. You can have multiple people filling in one-time slot for a group meeting. And I was like, this is great. And so I created one for the pre-podcast interview. And you can set up those calendars so that they can only schedule at certain times.
Love it. Yeah.
So I've created four or five different event types, labeled them clearly so people will know which one is them. Are you a one-to-one networking? Are you a prospective client interview? What is it? So that I can just say, hey, you're interested, schedule a time.
Here's the link. Awesome.
Have at it.
In the coaching program I do with Chuck Bauer called Certified Concierge Accountant, the very first topic we kick off with is time blocking and structured weeks. And there's a really cool way that you can structure every hour of your business day and mark free or busy on the calendar or name it a certain title in order for it to know that, hey, I'm available during these times for just for podcasting or for client meetings or whatever. And I think that I heard a quote the other day that like the more genius an invention, the more like obvious it seems. And I think that this e-calendar scheduling, these apps are like that because we all take it for granted now, but it was miserable manually doing that stuff before.
It was. And I'm in California, which in California, there's their own animal. And they've made it very difficult to hire a independent contractor.
Yes, I know this. I know this. I had a client that was nationwide, and these should have been subcontractors that were randomly hired like off of Upwork or something that he would randomly use one time for this one event. And California forced him to put them all on payroll and pay a ton of back taxes. It was a disaster.
And with that just comes extra expenses. And so I have been very reluctant to hire someone in-house. My wife helps me with a lot of the stuff, but it's very difficult for me to be able to justify at my level of business, unfortunately, or fortunately, to hire a W-2 employee to do things that I need them to do. But I could also hire someone through a virtual assistant somewhere in the Philippines or somewhere else for very cheap. I'm not going to do that for what I would want them to do, because I'm dealing with extremely sensitive data. I have people's whole net worth. I have their socials. I am not going to put that at risk by hiring someone in the Philippines to help me with my paperwork and whatever. And this Calendly app is an assistant that helps me with some of that stuff that I would have to normally pay a W-2 wage for.
Yeah, that's awesome. Anything that you can delegate or efficientize through apps, I'm all for. I do have to mention, this is tough for accountants to do because of the reasons that Keith just mentioned, the privacy concerns. But I've been using Upwork subcontractors for random HubSpot changes or CRM integrations, things that like, my team is amazing. We have almost a dozen people, but none of us are like experts in SaaS, which is now our whole thing. And I've been going to Upwork and finding some really amazing, smart people for decent wages across the world that can do some of this techie stuff for us and really excel at their craft. So shout out to Upwork.
Excellent.
Yeah. We've talked about productivity hacks. We've talked about a lot of things that I wanted to make sure that we do. How do you stay happy and healthy, Keith, in this crazy world of ours?
I am originally from the East Coast in Pennsylvania, grew up in the middle of the woods. So now I live in the concrete jumble of Orange County, and there are certainly certain parts of it that I enjoy. But quite frankly, I miss being out in nature. And so several times a year, either by myself or with my family, I will go camping somewhere deep in the mountains of the Sierra Nevada. So I'm completely 100% infatuated with the West Coast mountains. Whether they're the Cascades, the Sierra Nevadas, I don't really care, but I love them. And I enjoy the national parks, but I prefer the national forest because there's not as many people. One of my favorite things to do is to find a spot in the woods and or an area that's very remote and just hang out there for 3 to 5 days, do some day hikes or maybe do a through hike camp. I'm also a huge history nerd, and I've gotten the bug for
tell. With all the Rockefeller stuff. I was like, wow, he knows his history.
I've gotten interested in metal detecting, and in a few weeks, I'm actually going home to Pennsylvania. And gosh, we don't have time to talk about the history of the area where I grew up, but I'm related to probably 60% of the people in my hometown.
Wow.
at least one way or another. And there's history dating back to the 1600s. So I take my metal detector to old barns and old farmhouses and woods where there was old roads. And I find coins and relics from the past. And soon, here in a few weeks, we're going to have college football coming up. I'm a diehard Penn State Nittany Lion fan. And much to the chagrin of my West Coast friends who are USC fans, I'm excited that they're coming into the Big Ten, so I can see my Nittany Lions play in Southern California every couple of years.
Nice, nice. Okay, very cool. So nature grounds you. That's awesome. I love that. I think that is an important component for all of us, and we sometimes forget in our day-to-day lives. Someone the other day in a meeting was talking about doing just being barefoot in nature, like grounding exercises, and there's all kinds of things that you can do, but yeah. Okay. So we are coming to the end of our time together, and I want to touch on a couple more things. As I'm working on my doctorate in leadership, specialty in coaching, and coaching other accountants and whatnot, I've decided I want to incorporate a little bit of a mini coaching session into the podcast. So I asked you, Keith, beforehand, a topic that you might want to discuss, something that you have as a challenge, if you want to throw something out there.
Well, I talked earlier about my branding and people knowing about who I am and what I do. And that's the challenge that I'm trying to overcome right now.
So you've got the podcast, right?
Mm-hmm.
Do you have a producer? Do you have someone marketing it?
No.
Okay. I bet you there's someone on Upwork that can do that for you. So check that out.
I'm telling
you, there's a lot of small missed opportunities. I've got it all. I've got the podcast. I've got so many things going on. And I feel like I'm running in too many different directions sometimes that I don't focus on taking something to its maximum potential, right?
Right.
And so I bet there's a few tweaks that you could do with the podcast production and marketing and maybe hire someone that has done that in the past to really help you get the word out. Another thing that was really helpful for me as I started working directly with accountants was forming a Facebook group around the topic that I wanted to talk to people about. And so I have a Facebook group called Accounting Firm Influencers, and we have almost 7,000 accountants there where we're just talking about how to better your firms every day. Have you thought about maybe forming like a Facebook group or Twitter group or LinkedIn group around potential topics there?
I have, and I haven't done it because here's the thing. I know how to do webinars. I know how to do social media, but what I don't know how to do is to get people into the webinars and into the LinkedIn groups and whatever. That would be those ideal people. I don't know how to attract them. I could produce the world's greatest webinar, for example, but if no one knows about it and no one sees it and no one goes to it, I've just wasted the enormous amount of time.
Sure, I understand. So that's where maybe this Upwork person can help you out. But I've got all kinds of different people that do all kinds of different types of marketing that are very specialized that I didn't even know existed before the last couple of years. I can't stand marketing, by the way, but it seems like it's all that I have to do all the time now. So yeah, once you form the group, what's cool is that people will naturally, if you use the right search keywords, people will naturally find and gravitate to the group. But also you can just be in another group, someone talking about something and be like, hey, we talk about that over in my group. And so it tends to just naturally like catch on. I have some accounting firm students that have started groups around their ideal clients, which are truckers, a group on taxes for truckers, a group on transplants from California to Idaho, business owners that moved. And they grew so quickly because there were a lot of people in that scenario that happened to find those groups. So that would be another random tip from my side. Something I really enjoyed being on is the Forbes Finance Council. So we can talk more about that if you're not familiar with that, but it gets you a lot of good exposure and you can apply for that and write articles that are going to go out nationally. So yeah, so those are my three kind of top tips that I can come up with. Hopefully something jives a little bit there for you and can
definitely
push you in the right direction.
Yeah, it's great.
All right. So we're going to go ahead and wrap up for today. Now, how can people get a hold of you if they want to maybe partner with you or if they want to use you as a financial planner or they want to talk more about some of the topics today?
Yeah, well, I'm very active on LinkedIn, so you can find me there. I'm Keith Conley in Tustin, California. But my website is another way you can get in touch with me. And my website is truelegacyfp.com, truelegacyfinancialplanning.com.
Beautiful. All right, Keith. So I told you this session was going to go so quickly. We didn't even get to a couple of the questions, but there's so much more I could ask you. Is there anything else that you'd like to add for today before we wrap up?
Yeah, with CPAs and tax professionals, there's very often this sense of competition with financial planners. We don't do the same thing, but my desire is to make life for the CPA and the tax professional and my clients easier. And if I can have a good relationship with the client and the tax professional, I might be able to get the CPA and the tax professional documents for tax filing rather than just continuing to nag the client. And so that might be one way. And my desire will be to collaborate with the tax professional of my clients so that we can come to decisions together to help the client. For example, I had one client that was referred to me by a CPA, very successful business owner, and they were trying to defer as much income as possible into a retirement plan, which I do this company's retirement plan. They're set by IRA. And it's a good thing. And I'm not saying that I'm against retirement plans because I'm certainly not. But the CPA and I had a very meaningful conversation about sometimes it doesn't make sense to defer as much as you can. Sometimes we should be putting money in other buckets rather than just deferring taxes until the future.
Yeah.
And he's like, hey, let's defer as much as possible. And then he and I, the tax professional and I worked together and we came to a decision that we brought to the client and the client took that our recommendation that we came to together.
I love that. And you know what? If y'all had tried to rush that and you all three being like on a Zoom or something trying to hash that out, the client probably would have gotten really nervous and confused versus you working directly with the accountant to make sure that you're on the same page and supporting one another and open-minded before you present the solution to the client. So that's awesome. I love that.
Yeah. Now, the goal is not to, you know, be in the CPA's ear, you know, constantly, because I get it. You know, you're the tax professional, especially in tax filing season, they're swamped. And so it's not like we have to be on the phone every day or we have to block out an hour. It might be a 5-minute conversation, but at least we are working together and have that level of confidence in each other and building that trust in one another.
Yeah, I love that. Okay. Thank you so much, Keith. I really appreciate having you today. I want to thank the sponsor, my company, TaxOne IQ. That's another tip, by the way. This is the first time I have a sponsor. And I'm like, you know what? I'm tired of doing this for free. I'm adding a sponsor to my podcast. So maybe you could add some sponsorship too. But yeah, it was a great discussion. Really appreciate you and have a wonderful rest of your day. All right.
Hey, thank you so much. I really appreciate this opportunity.
Thank you for listening to the Concierge CPA, hosted by Tax Plan IQ. We believe that every person has a unique message that can positively impact the world. If you are a successful accounting firm owner or influencer who would like to be on this program, please visit JackieMeyerCPA.com, JackieMeyerCPA.com to apply. Please share this on social media and rate us so we can continue our good work. Join our Facebook group called Accounting Firm Influencers or connect with me on most platforms under Jackie Meyer CPA. Thanks for being accountable to transforming our industry today.